Okay, let's get going. It's so nice out. I mean, winter, right? What a concept. A couple things about for students who are working on projects. First, reimbursement. Just want to remind everybody to keep their receipts, and whenever you feel like it, you turn those into Bernice in room 551, Terman 551. And tell her it's for this course, and there'll be no problem, you know, getting reimbursed. If it's under a certain amount, you can get cash. If it's above a certain amount, they'll send you a check. So, and some of the expenses, you know, could include your expenses for the posters or anything you need for your presentation. Okay. Another item that was brought up last time is the individual reflection. Now, this is, I talked about this at the beginning of the year, that I wanted you to keep a notebook about your thoughts and feelings about the project that you were doing. And so the individual reflection is a document that takes the notes from that notebook and puts it together in a story, in a format. And that's separate from your team's final report. And again, it's an individual thing, so everybody does one. And the third item is that some people still have missed lectures to make up, so I want to encourage those that do to get them in as soon as possible, because I know things sort of get crazy toward the end of the quarter, and I don't want that to be the last thing you have to deal with. Okay? And all the talks have their slides and audio up. Okay? And we don't have any handouts today. any questions about any of this stuff? I'll be giving you some additional instructions on the presentation. But basically, I want to say that you're going to be standing in front of a poster, and you're going to be making sort of like a formal presentation as if you were doing a slideshow, but you're just going to be a poster behind you. And there's a lot of your grade goes into into that presentation. So I encourage everybody to do a good job and to practice what you're going to say and who's going to say it and so on. Okay. Okay, our discussion item for today. Who can identify this device? Tell me who uses it and how it works. Water pressure massage. That is incorrect.
Artificial lung.
You got the second word right. Iron lung is correct. Okay. Anybody know what its use was and for what? Not exactly. Yes, it provides respiration, but for what kind of patients? What kind of people needed that? I'll give you a hint. It's not due to spinal cord injury. Not necessarily due to spinal cord injury.
Polio.
Yes. How many people remember polio? Thank goodness you don't remember it, because it was very scary. When I was growing up, it was scary because they didn't know, you know, where it came from, and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, one day you got it. So there was no vaccine for it at the time, and a lot of people, you know, got it. And I remember we had to get shots at school or have sugar cubes with the vaccine on it. So it affected everybody. And you want to see something very scary? Here's a whole ward of people in iron lungs. But I read that this isn't a true picture. It was sort of a setup picture, that there really wasn't, the people in these iron lungs aren't really all patients. But this is the kind of thing that, you know, parents were worried about, you know, their kid being in an iron lung. And if ever you can use the word confined, this would be the right place for confined. So it provided... There was a pump that that pressurized the interior, and so when the interior is pressurized, it basically pushed air out of your out of your lungs, and when it drew a little bit negative pressure, it would draw air in, so it basically would breathe for you. And there was a little flexible gasket here that you stuck your head out of, and there was a mirror here and stuff, so you can see. But they were on wheels, but they had to be, you had to be plugged in, and that's what you did all day. It's pretty scary. And later on they thought, why does the whole body have to be in a respirator if you're just blowing up the lungs? So they have these chest respirators, and so that was a little bit more portable. And here you see a guy reading newspaper, vaccine triumph, and it's polio threat. Well, this is pretty funny because it's not going to help this guy. So it's not, but it did help a lot of people, and polio is basically gone. So that's good. And so here's a couple stories, that were actually from last year, and these are actually reporting the same event. So in this one, women lives a full life in an iron lung. In this other one, they talk about a woman that died in an iron lung. And actually, I think in this one, this is the woman that died in the iron lung, and this is the one that led a full life. Probably both of them did, but it's interesting, what the headline is for these articles. So, Maurice told me about a dermatologist at Stanford. Is he at Stanford or Watsonville, who was a practicing dermatologist who was in a respirator. And what do? They wheeled him around to see the patient, or had the patients come to him? Yeah. So, that's still pretty difficult. Another device to provide breathing is called a pneumo belt, and this is just something you wear over your lower body, and it pressurizes a bladder in here, which pushes up on your diaphragm to allow you to breathe. So, and here's a guy I actually knew who was in an iron lung for a lot of the time, but he also had this respirator. And I want to ask Maurice, did he actually breathe through this, or did he use this to operate the pneumo belt?
He did what's called frog breathing.
Yeah.
Where you essentially gulp air.
Yeah.
And
you
talk and then
you
gulp air.
Yeah. But I
I
remember at nighttime he was an iron lung, and this is his son, but Ed Roberts is actually a very important person in the area of disability activism. He was the first severely disabled person to go to Cal, and his dorm room was the infirmary. That's where he lived, and he encouraged other people to disabilities to go to school, and he started the whole disability rights movement, and he actually sued the California Vocational Rehab Department in order to go to school, and later on he became the director of that same department, and he was also the founding member of the Center for Independent Living and the World Institute on Disability. The Centers for Independent Living were a real movement, getting people with disabilities together and getting them actually doing things that really helped them, from the people with disabilities point of view. And still, Berkeley is pretty much a hotbed of disability activism, and he was very important in that field, so I wanted to bring that up. But here's another device, and I've actually seen people in this at the VA, and this is called a rocking bed, and basically the person's head is up here and his feet are on this, so it doesn't slide off, but the bed rocks back and forth, head to toe, and that shifts the weight of the you know your body below your diaphragm, so you can breathe that way. And there was a couple guys in Chicago at the VA. That's how they slept. They slept in these beds, and this is how they worked. I'm not sure how the heck they could sleep with this kind of movement going on. It wasn't quite this fast. It was at breathing rate, but it was quite interesting to see. But now, like Dr. Creasy said, there are these things called phrenic nerve stimulators, and there's one kind that has electrodes that go on your skin that stimulates the nerves that control your lungs externally to help you breathe. But this particular one, and the one that Dr. Creasy showed, look like they work on the stimulator is embedded inside the body. So so this is a much more compact way of providing breathing stimulation. Breathing. Okay. So next Tuesday, my colleague Peter Axelson will be driving in from Nevada, 5 hours, just to be with you. And he was a Stanford student and a VA employee, and he's been he's working in the fields of recreation and standards and wheelchairs and things like that. So he's going to be coming and telling us about what he's been up to. And it's usually a very compelling lecture.
He's got a bunch of gold medals.
He actually designed some ski sledding systems so that he could enjoy ski sledding on the slopes, and I'm sure he'll be talking about that as well. So, I mean, that's sort of a conflict of interest to design a sport that you win the gold medals in. But yeah, he's a fascinating guy, and I hope you enjoy him. I should mention that there'll be an opportunity. He's going to be around after class, and there's an opportunity. A bunch of us are going out to dinner, so you're welcome to join us for that. Just let me know so I can figure out how big a table I need to get. But this afternoon we have Maurice LeBlanc, and I want to say that Maurice has been pretty instrumental in getting assistive technology projects going, initially in ME113 through the years and coaching them and stuff like that. And he, in doing so, he actually was the helped get this course going, because there was an interest from students in doing assistive technology projects, but there was also a realization that there needed to be a course to get some students up to speed on this so they can work on these kinds of projects in ME113. And Maurice also gave me the opportunity to organize this class, so I owe a big debt to Maurice for getting me this gig. But Maurice trained in prosthetics and orthotics at UCLA Medical School, following getting a mechanical engineering degree at Stanford, right here. And he's worked at the UCLA Prosthetics and Orthotics Program, the National Academy of Sciences, the Children's Hospital at Stanford, where I met him. God, it's almost been 30 years ago now. And he's worked at the VA Medical Center, and he's also been associated with the biomedical engineering program here at Stanford. So for a man who needs no further introduction and who needs no slides, here's Maurice LeBlanc.
Okay. Yeah, great. Thanks, Dave. I'd like to follow on some of what Dave was saying about Ed Roberts. There's a little bit more to the story. He grew up in San Mateo and got polio when he was a youngster. And that was like 50s, 60s. There were some polio outbreaks. And Rotary Club now is trying to eradicate polio internationally, going around the world giving vaccines and stuff. And it's tough in developing countries because you got to give multiple shots And sometimes people show up with the first one, but not the second one. Anyway, it's tougher than... It's easy conceptually to say we're going to eradicate polio, but it's still happening. But anyway, Ed Roberts grew up in San Mateo and got polio. And he was in a program once with his mother. And someone asked his mother, what would Ed be doing if he hadn't gotten polio? She said he'd be playing baseball in the Marines. Just one of these really active guys. But the doctors told him he'd be a vegetable, and eventually he did these things that Dave mentioned, became head of the State Department of Rehabilitation, and he used to go to meetings and introduce himself as an asparagus or a cucumber, stuff like that, real character. And next week, I encourage all of you to hear Peter Axelson. He's just great. He was going to the Air Force Academy and was injured in a mountain climbing accident and became a paraplegic. And for a school project here at Stanford, he designed a sled that paraplegics get into, and they can steer it by leaning one way or the other. And then he developed the sit ski. It's essentially a big mono ski with a seat on top, little outrigger skis. And now there's competition in it. And he's always stayed ahead of the curve with technology to win all these gold medals. He's always ahead. But anyway, interesting guy, doing some neat stuff. This is a no slides, no PowerPoint presentation. How many people have used crutches? A few? Okay. Tell me what your experience was. How'd you find them?
I guess it was okay for flat terrain, but stairs were a pain.
Were they hard to use, easy to use? This one, okay. How about you?
I didn't have them for very long, so. But yeah, the stairs were always fun. It was always me. I always had to go into them kind of wondering if I was going to end up in five more pieces.
Same kind. Okay, and you.
I was on them for almost a month. It was fun. But I was more afraid of going downstairs than upstairs.
Who else was it? When people fit crutches, they're supposed to leave room under the axilla, two or three fingers, because if you take weight there, there are nerves and blood supply that make your arms numb or hurt. Or who else? They actually make crutches with a little retractable, like a pick, like a nail, for ice. And someone else,
you? It was only for like a week, a week and a half. Don't want to do that. That's, from the school, there's some like dirt everywhere, so not easy to see dirt. Like that.
Because they're slippery? Or
well, just because, I mean, it's not really stable, I guess. Like, it would be hard, like, concrete surface. It's like, you know,
okay, okay. With soft surface, you dug in. Okay. Well, we don't know too much about the history of crutches because there's nothing written on them, but we do have some information through artwork and even pottery. They've shown pictures of people using crutches. Our best guess is the crutches are about 5,000 years old. And they haven't changed a whole lot. They started out as a stick. And if you go to some developing countries, you still see just a straight stick, and they'll wrap their leg around it and sort of move the stick with their leg on it. But eventually, people looked for a branch that had like a Y at the top so they could sort of cradle this, and then someone had the idea of putting a little sling on the Y to be more comfortable. And still further on, someone had the idea of another branch where you could sort of hold on to with your hand to control it. But that evolved over the years and didn't change much until the late 1800s when someone developed a saw to cut the stick. So they cut the stick and did this with it and put the handle in the middle. And it was a wood version of this. And we still have these now. So they haven't changed a whole lot. And they're pretty simple and pretty functional. They're basically a couple kinds of crutches. There's the underarm crutch like this, and there's a forearm crutch that you've probably seen. That when this is extended. It's a forearm crutch. This is a small size. And the idea is that people... this is used mainly for people who have temporary need for crutches. So if you're in the hospital and you get discharged, you probably get a pair of these. And at garage sales, you find these in the corner of the garage someplace. People who use crutches permanently tend to use the forearm type because they're less tall. You can stow them easier. You can also, when you have two of them, you can grab something and the crutch will remain on your arm like this. So, crutches, it takes about twice as much energy to use a crutch as it does to just to walk normally. Right, ambulation. Did I don't know if Jessica showed a curve of energy expenditure? So this is speed. Okay, and this is energy. So there's an optimum speed at which we walk. And if we walk faster than that or slower than that, we consume more energy. And people with crutches are over here someplace. They're going to be walking slower, and they're going to be using more... Whoops, I got that. Yeah. They're going to be using more energy and... Whoops. And walking slower. And most of the energy expenditure is due to vertical movement and not horizontal movement. When we use crutches, we swing through, but we have to hike our body up to clear our feet. So essentially doing a push-up with every step. So the energy expenditure, that accounts for most of it. Some of it is a shock absorption. Our arms weren't made for walking, so when we use crutches and hit the pavement, we're absorbing, and that takes a little energy. But most of it is due to this vertical movement. There have been people play around with different kinds of crutches over the years. Some people have played around with a pogo crutch. Anyone tried a pogo stick? Well, people have tried using crutches that are essentially two pogo sticks, where you come down on them, you get a little shock absorption, and you get a little lift off, if you will. So they're kind of fun to use. But if you go down too far, it's not good, because you have to hike up farther to clear your feet. So the pogo stick didn't make it. For crutches, anyway. And they've tried that with using mechanical springs and with air cylinders, different ways to accomplish that. Another thing that people have done is to have a crutch that has a roller on the bottom of it. So you're essentially rolling along. And if you imagine an individual, and let's say that this is their shoulder, then this is really a circle, but they're just using part of the circle to roll on, if you will. And this is interesting, but it didn't provide a lot of advantage to people, and the roller sort of got in their way for like doing stairs. But it has an interesting feature, and that is that if you... When we walk, if this is the heel, you land on it, and you take off on the toe, you get this much more stride length. So you get a little bit more distance out of it, as opposed to a regular crutch, which you're just rotating on a point. Another thing that people have tried is a sling crutch or swing crutch, where you have a pair of crutches, and you have essentially what may amount to a mountain climbing harness in between. So you can sit on this and take your weight. And then when you swing through, this thing is actually kind of swinging. It's a little bit trickier to use, but interesting concept. And of all the ones that I've showed you, this seems, and I tried out, I did a project, tried out a bunch of ideas on crutch users. Had a bunch of crutch users try a bunch of different kinds of crutches. And this is kind of a sleeper. So.
It sort of looks like a reciprocating gainer morphosis.
Yeah, in a way, except they go together instead of.
They go together.
Yeah, they don't scissor. There are several different kinds of crutch gait. Let me get this so it's a decent height. Be at the max here. Some people who don't need crutches severely will just kind of have a walking gait. So they'll use crutches like two canes maybe. And there's a kind of gait that's called swing two, where you actually swing to the crutches. Like that. And then there's a gait for people who are a little bit more ambitious of swing through. So you're actually swinging through all the way. And there's yet another gait that is really interesting. It's called wheeling. You got to be good to do this, and a few crutch users are. If you see pictures of four-legged animals running that are really fast, they don't run like this. It's like this. So people who do the wheeling gait with crutches will put down a crutch and then a foot and a crutch and a foot. It's almost like having a rimless wheel. Imagine a wheel with spokes but with no rim on it. So you're rolling along on the spokes, if you will. And they can move pretty fast with these. I can't do it to show you. But it's an interesting gait. And if you used them for just a week at a time, you wouldn't get there. So let's see, what other kinds of crutches are there? Let me get my notes. Oh, in limb prosthetics, there are prosthetic feet. And there is a type of foot called an energy storing foot that is kind of the principle is that it stores a little energy when you come off and gives you a little push off. So we actually did a crutch and put an energy storing foot on the bottom of it. So you get a crutch that walks. And that was interesting, but the energy expenditure studies we did on all these different kinds, there wasn't a big difference. But this had the same benefit as this, though, that you come down on the heel and take off on the toe, so you get this much more stride length. Well, sort of given this background, I wanted to do something in crutches, and when I worked at Lucille Packard Children's Hospital at Stanford, we had a form that we gave out to everyone with disabilities that said, I wish I had a blank, so they could tell us. And we had a little book of these needs, if you will. So if anyone, they were great for volunteer projects or student projects. And but there were a number of people who said, I wish I had a crutch that would stow under the airline seat. Because when I go on the airline, they take the crutches away, and I want to go to the bathroom. Or if you go out to a restaurant, you put them against the wall and they fall over. You know, there's no convenient place to put them. So we start playing around, and some of these have been student projects. With the idea, we looked at a single barrel, a double barrel, and actually a triple barrel. But what this is a crutch, so it extends down. If I can there we go. And extends up. This was the original prototype. So essentially, you could get a crutch that would collapse into thirds. So this comes down and this comes down. And I think it was like 22 inches or something. So you could get it underneath an airline seat. And it worked reasonably well. And this was something kind of interesting. This was is on a ball here. So you could turn this and basically lock it in any position. So you could change hand positions in that envelope, if you will. So then, a company actually picked up on this and made an aluminum extrusion to make sort of a commercial version of that. So this would pop out, and people who got good at this could actually kind of do this, and both would pop out. Of course, they had a little trouble at the airline security station with this. But anyway, the company who made this did well with it. They made a couple thousand pairs, and then they got into wheelchairs. That was Luconics. I don't know if you ever knew them, Dave. and got into trouble, went out of business. So this never survived past the 2,000 pairs that were sold. But, and there was another feature to it, is that you could use it like this, but you could also turn this and have the handle to the side. Or you could have it to the front. So you could change position. Because if you're in the same position all the time, your hand takes gas. Because your hand's taking, you know, a lot of the body weight. And so it's nice to be able to change position a little bit. Also had the idea of having basically the shape of a light bulb here. Because the light bulb doesn't care how you grab it. It's kind of a round, it's a bulb. So you can sort of keep changing positions on the bulb. But, so that's that. Yeah?
Was there anything specific they were addressing, or was it just a cool design feature to put the holes kind of in a spiral?
That was actually a good question. Good question. It was intentional because once you set this to your holes, you don't have to go through everyone else's. So when I do this, it goes to... Yeah. So if I turn this all the way out, then I can turn it. And then that was one of the reasons for doing this, too. If you, because different holes, it's going to line up differently. So you could orientate that. Yeah, it was. Another feature of this is that if you just change out the top tube, you've got a forearm crutch. Which isn't going to be as tall, but... So now I've got a forearm crutch just by changing out the top tube. I've got a friend who I went here to Stanford with who's post-polio himself, and he had a pair of these for years and always had fun at the airport making up stories and so forth. But he was the one who could sort of click this and have the top and the bottom flip out. Okay. And then this is, by changing the size of the barrel, you can have like small, medium, or large. So this would be a kid size. Same deal. And later on, they went to also a feature of this is that you could change, with this screw here, you could change the position of the hand independent of the position of the height of the top part. And then later on, they went to this a different kind of extrusion that basically was kind of, that looked solid with a slit in it. And again, you could slide the handle up and down in it, but it worked much the same. Another feature is that you had to pull out on this to do it. So to prevent accidents of this being pushed in and having it collapse, because you could hit it against something and collapse it. Another feature is when I was at Children's Hospital, we had someone on crutches, and he said that it has to work not only in compression but tension. Because he would use the crutch to, like in mountain climbing, to pull himself up with the crutch. So it had to be tight both ways. Sometime later, We were funded for some of this work through a government agency. They requested we make a pair of crutches for then Vice President Gore, because he injured his Achilles tendon playing basketball that you probably won't remember. It's been a few years ago. But we made the design and we put it in a single tube of
get one of these, there we go, holes. And we made it with a pinstripe to match his blue pinstripe suit, all this. Anyway, and we never interacted with him, but the agency that gave us money, we made it for them, and then they gave it to him. But anyway, it was kind of a fun project. But we accomplished this. This is in order to get this spiral, it's sort of a, I think there were eight of these, we had a hexagon shape inside, that this tube is a hexagon shape, so it fits inside of this tube. It's a little bit trickier to do. And again, you could have the either version of it, the forearm version or the underarm version, by just changing out the top tube. Okay, now this last pair is kind of fun. The Department of Defense actually used carbon fiber composite material a lot in military construction. And they were trying to do some spin-off technology, trying to find medical use of some of the technologies they developed for the military. And they funded us to do some crutches out of a carbon fiber composite material. And this was actually an ME-310 project at one point. And so we thought, if we're going to use this material, we shouldn't just copy this design. That's not accomplishing anything. So in limb prosthetics, there's something called a flex foot. I don't know if you've seen it. Okay. Well, the flex foot is like a little carbon fiber. It's a curved thing that gives you some compression, and athletes use them a lot. There's some guys, amputees, running the 100-yard or 100-meter dash almost as fast as able-bodied, just a few tenths of a second slower. So we use the same concept for the crutches. So these are S-shaped to give a little spring and return of energy. And there are no moving parts on it. A lot of these crutches have holes for adjustment, and the holes with use will enlarge because you've got a pin in it, and it makes the hole bigger, and they start clicking and clacking, and the same with these pieces. They'll loosen up after a while, so it's hard for a person using crutches to sneak around. So this is a one-piece deal. And we made the top so you could still, it would still hang on, but you could get out of it. So, and further, that with this slant here, you're actually taking some weight on the forearm and not all of it on the hand. So you could weight share a little bit. And they're pretty cool. You guys can try them out if you want. While since I've tried these. And a lot of people using crutches, I think, just appreciated the fact that we were trying to do something different. You know, they weren't the same old thing. They're a little bit more high-tech, a little jazzier, quiet. We also had the idea that this is an S shape, and if you hinge it in the middle and flip this, this curve will fit over this curve. So you could, hinging it, unfortunately, might create some noise and some mechanical maintenance problems later on. But in any event, it would be a concept of just flipping this. So you'd have something
maybe this long. It'd be more convenient to put it underneath an airline seat or someplace. Another idea that's come to mind is to put wheels on a crutch. If any of you have been in a doctor's office, they have these round stools with four legs. Well, if you put your knee on that, you can push around on it. Imagine something like that in of a crutch that you could sort of push off and push around in.
So it would lock up your pressure, or always be rolling?
Well, the idea was it would always be rolling, which is going to create some stability problems, obviously.
Right. Well, I was thinking of some of these footstools that you see that you can push it around as long as you're not standing on it. But when you stand on it, the wheels sort of retract and you're on solid ground. So.
Yeah,
That could be
it could be, yeah. So you run it along, and then when you
plant it, then it
yeah,
provides,
right. But anyway, it's fun, and it's a challenge because the crutches haven't changed a lot over the 5,000 years because they're pretty simple to begin with, and it's really hard to improve on something simple. But there are quite a few people using crutches, both temporary and permanent, out there. So if improvements can be made, people would appreciate it. Any questions or thoughts?
Out of curiosity, on kind of like the semicircle foot idea, has anyone ever tried? I'm sure this probably isn't as good a design, but have they ever tried putting like a flat pivot on the bottom of a crutch so that when you put it down, like it's parallel to the ground, and then you just kind of swing through over it, it just provides kind of stability, I guess?
You mean so it's a T?
Yeah, it's like an upside down T.
Okay, so it's like this?
Mm-hmm. And then the bottom part pivots.
It'd be
so
a pivot point.
Oh, I see what you mean. So it pivots there.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
okay.
I was curious if there was ever a design that was like that.
There has not been. It would provide some stability, particularly in maybe icy conditions or something, because you'd have more on the ground. If you put anything on the bottom, a foot or the rocker bottom or whatnot, then you have a problem with the stairs too. And curbs and stuff like that. So there's some trade-offs. But it's an interesting idea. People who use canes have maybe you've seen them, a quad cane. Yeah, so basically it's got 4 feet on it when you plant it down. Okay, I think I covered the things I wanted to cover, Dave. Yeah, challenges would be, I think, light's better, and that's true with a prosthesis, as well as if you're hauling it around, the lighter the better. It'd be nice if it were attractive. People don't say too much about it, but you know, these things come in wood or aluminum, and for people who use canes, you'll see a lot of canes painted and some interesting designs on them, or clear glass or plexiglass, whatever they are. So appearance, even if you did nothing but make them appear better, that would be nice. Energy expenditure is a big one. You tire out more quickly, you're using twice the energy.
How do you measure energy expenditure?
With a number of tests, it's been verified that energy expenditure is proportional to heart rate. And Hewlett-Packard makes a heart rate telemetry system. So in Jessica Rose's lab, we did some tests on energy expenditure. And it's all relative. It's not absolute. But you can test the energy expenditure of any kind of crutch versus the normal one by using the EMG telemetry system. In fact, we had one young woman who was a high-level leg amputee using crutches, and we had to stop the test because her heart rate shot up, and it turns out she'd had a Pepsi right before. And Pepsis have caffeine, and it makes that much difference in your heart rate.
Trials, sure. Crutches. Maybe we can have some. Since we have so many pairs of crutches, we can have crutch races or something.
Here you go. You used them for a week, right? Want to play with them? No, that's got gel in it to give a little cushioning. At least you can.
Before we get too much further along, I want to thank Maurice for coming with all his props.
Yeah, that...